Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, the weather's fine. I mean, it's a lot warmer than it was. I'm going to survive it. It's fine.
You're going to survive.
I'm going to survive. I didn't think there for a while I would. You know, this cold weather's just not my cup of tea.
No.
I'd rather do without.
I know. And you watch now, because this always happens. In a month from now, you'll probably be saying, wow, I wish it was a little colder because it's awfully hot. We'll be eating our words.
Not till July. July is when, to me, it really gets hot.
Oh, yeah.
I can make it till July. Yeah. You know, everybody leaves Midland. I hate to tell you this. When school's out, they all go to Rio Doce. They go to Europe. They go to Alaska. They go to all the cool places.
Yeah. Yeah.
There won't be anybody left in town.
No, it's a deserted desert town, is what it is.
It really is. People don't even call me and say, "Faye, I need this, I need that." No, when school's out, they disappear for a month.
So it's 4 weeks that it's just everything goes dark. Nobody's to be found anywhere.
It kind of goes dark. You know, I don't have anybody saying I need a printout. You know. I need to put this money in today, you know, and get it invested. It's pretty quiet in June.
Yeah.
Because they all go, a lot of people go to Europe. And a lot of people take the Alaska cruises.
Ooh.
And some people go to Galveston for that cruise because it's really expensive. And that's only a short time. I think it's 3 or 4 days. You can do that, you know, for a weekend.
Yeah.
They go to Rio Doce. Of course, you had all the fires last summer there, so I don't know how things are there this summer.
Hmm. Yeah. Boy, an Alaska cruise sounds nice. Now, right after the weather that we've just had, maybe not, but by the time it wears off a little.
By summer, everybody will be itching to go to Alaska.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people go more than once.
Do they really?
And a lot of church groups go. Then a lot of just friends, 4 or 5 of them will get together and go. All kinds of people go. I know the First Baptist Church in Plano, Prestonwood, they're fixing to all go to Alaska. And I think they've went every year.
You know, I know
they take
people.
A whole group, you know.
Really? A whole group of people?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds fun.
They're advertising it. And First Baptist downtown, I know they're going, and then a lot of people go to Israel. I don't know if it's safe now to go to Israel, but they go to the Holy Land lots of times.
Mm.
And I know people, you know, it's a once in a lifetime you should go there.
Yeah.
They always tell me it's once in a lifetime.
I bet. I would love to go see that. Just, you know, walk through Jerusalem and just kind of like...
Oh, yes.
Oh.
And see the wall.
Yes.
To see all the scrolls, the ancient writings, the mountains, the important things there, the Red Sea. I mean, you know, and they baptize people there. And, you know, you float. You know, in that water, you know, and there's so many things that have been unearthed over the years in Jerusalem, you know, layers and layers. And they very gently, you know, take this dirt out and take it out and find all these artifacts in the, for years and years there.
Yeah.
And they'll never discover it all. But it's amazing what all they have discovered and what's on display.
Yeah, I'm amazed at all they're not really caves, but they're like in the ground and they're stone buildings that, you know, you walk down into it with what kind of looks like a cave, but they put like, I don't know, like steps and, you know, like pavement down, or not pavement, but like tile or something like that, a long, long, like thousands of years ago when they built them, and they're still there and they haven't changed. And that would be fascinating to see.
And they've discovered more and more of those underground. And they'll let you go in there and look around and walk down there.
Wow. That would be...
Oh, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
For people to see. And everybody should go once to the Holy Land, as long as there's not any fighting going on.
I know. That's the thing. Every time I see something, you know, some like reporter or something is in Israel, I find myself, and maybe it's just a gut reaction, but I find myself like looking up to see is there anything flying overhead that shouldn't be, you know, even though I'm not there, I'm looking at whoever is, and I'm thinking, boy, I hope nothing goes over their head because I'm just expecting it. I don't know why. Freaks
yeah,
me
and,
out.
There's lots and lots of things. I mean, look how many years it's been, and all the things have been unearthed that are on display.
Yeah.
And every year they find more and more things. They find all these writings on the stones that are really important. Just so many things.
And it seems like things over there are preserved really well. I don't know if it's because of the stone or the earth or different, I don't know, what the dirt is made of and what the rocks are made of. I don't know, but it just seems like things from thousands of years ago are so well preserved. And I don't know if they're, I mean, it, like over here, we might find something from like the Civil War, Revolutionary War, and it's like mostly disintegrated and, you know, it's not there. But over in like Israel and Jerusalem and that whole, you know, area, it just seems like when they find something, it's mostly intact and preserved really, really well somehow. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But I would love to see it. And it would be a once-in-a-lifetime trip.
It would. And usually people go there for 10 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Usually they go for 10 days.
Wow.
And they go to, I think they go to a lot of the cities there, you know, besides just Jerusalem. I know they go to a lot of places. Sometimes they go to the Greek islands also.
I have seen pictures of the Greek islands, and man, it's just so white and blue, and the water is crystal clear, and wow, that would be cool to see, too.
I know some people that go every year either to the Greek islands or Thailand, and they've told me about the Greek islands. It's wonderful for swimming, for hiking, a beautiful sea there, calm, blue as it can be.
Mm. Wow.
And they do everything out there. They boat. You can rent a boat. You can do all kinds of things. Parasail. You can do everything in the water there. And it seems like Greece is a very, very peaceful place. They say that a lady told me that all religions are there, every religion in the world.
Really?
And that they've gotten along all these years.
Huh. I didn't know that.
That's what she told me. And she lived there for many years.
Oh, wow.
She planned to go back and retire there after living in the United States for 20 years.
Really? Yes. Well, then that must really be, I mean, that must have obviously made an impression just to want to actually pick up and move there. It sounds
amazing.
Well,
she had a house built over there and while she was living in the United States, and she planned to go back and retire there after being in the United States all these years. And she said it didn't cost a lot to build a house, you know, so she built her house while she was living in the States. And remember, living in the States, she got Social Security, all this. And she said over there she'll also get a retirement.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently, the Greek give you a retirement.
Oh, I didn't know that. Even if you haven't lived there your whole life?
Well, if you've lived there a certain number of years, which she did.
Wow.
Well, now they give you that. So she said she was going to have, you know, two retirements, you know, and a new house to go to home to.
Boy, somebody outsmarted the system here.
That's right. I mean, I thought it was pretty smart.
Yeah.
Then she told me about all the religions, and because I questioned her about it, I said, "Are you afraid?" You know, and she said, "Oh no." She said, "All religions are there, and they all get along."
That's shocking. I didn't know that was even possible.
Huh. Well, apparently in Greece, it's different than the other countries.
Yeah.
And she said they have beautiful cathedrals, beautiful churches, you know, the old churches that we would all like to see. And she said there's many of them there.
Wow. That's just, it sounds amazing. It's just shocking to me because, you know, you go a little bit, you know, you go over to the, like the Middle Eastern countries, like we were talking about with like Israel and all that, they're always fighting about religion. That's usually the basis of all their fighting.
That's right.
And for
and
the
I don't
role.
Know why the Greeks are getting along.
I don't know. Maybe there's something in the water.
It could be. Maybe it's the food, all those olives they eat.
Oh, that could be.
Oh,
wow.
They eat a lot of green olives. Wow. They grow a lot of olives.
So I assume she's been planning for like years and years and investing and growing all
yes,
of
she
her.
Has. She's, and her family still lives there. She has a sister and her husband. She has nephews that live there.
Oh, wow. Neat. So it's almost like homecoming for her.
Yes, it is. And I know during the years I knew the lady, she would go back to Greece every so often. You have to go back every so often,
yeah.
I guess, to maintain that dual citizenship that she had.
Hmm. Wow. That sounds...
She wouldn't lose that.
Sounds amazing. Is she close to retirement, or is she still out of ways?
Uh-huh. No, wow. She's getting close.
Cool.
Oh. I've known her for a number of years.
That sounds amazing. I don't know. I've never heard of anybody that they're planning on retiring in Greece and or really out of the country anywhere. And so it's just kind of fascinating to me. I'm sure I've got more questions, but I won't. I'll just kind of move on and think. Well, there's something
you move
to shoot
on
for
from that. Okay.
Yeah, cause at some point it'll start to make me sad because I'm thinking I should.
You'll
have
be wanting
that.
To go visit Greece.
Yeah, I will. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, but your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com. So, there's a lot of great things on those websites.
Yeah, there is. I mean, we talk about some things, but we can only cover so much. So if you need more, it's all right there. So when somebody's planning for retirement, if they want to like leave the country, how soon should they like start investing conservatively, and how soon should they start planning something like that?
Well, I mean, I think that when you're in your 40s, you need to start investing. If you don't, you're not going to have enough to retire on, unless you have a windfall or you're already wealthy, because, you know, it takes a lot of years to build a nest egg, unless you're really, really smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, things go up and they go down. You know, gold went down, silver went down last week, now it's back up. But, you know, you can't always depend on where it's going to be the day you retire. So, you know, you need to be investing all the time, and I think conservatively. Now, a lot of people aren't. They're into funny things. But, you know, if you stay with the tried and true, you'll be all right.
Yeah. You know, people tend to fall for new and shiny things. I remember, you know, when the crypto thing first started coming out, and I still don't understand it, but people would just jump in. They're like, wow, this is new and exciting and fun. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to invest in this. And, you know, it just seems like that would be just a little bit too, you're putting everything on the line.
Unless you've got a lot of money, which if you've got a lot of money and can lose some, you can do crypto.
Yeah.
But if you're an ordinary person, you probably should not do crypto because that wallet sometimes is empty. And remember, you can't see the crypto. It's an imaginary thing, you know? Now, some of the banks are going to start dealing in crypto. But every once in a while, there was a story this week about this crypto that, you know, $500 million just disappeared.
Oh, geez.
And I don't know how in the heck you get it back when it's crypto. I mean, I can't figure that out.
I don't
know. We talked a year ago about them mining it in Texas. And the, you know, the guy at the little town where they were mining all that electricity, he asked him, he said, well, can I take it down to the Chevrolet house and buy a pickup with it? You know, I mean, that was his concern. And I'm kind of the same way. Can I put my hands on it?
Yeah.
Can I see it and touch it?
I mean, what can okay? So can you? I mean, can you go down and buy a new truck with it? Or
if they deal in crypto, but a lot of people are not ready for that. Now, the big cities, you know, they know how to do that. But a guy out here on the street, he's probably not going to take your crypto. I mean, he's probably kind of still scratching his head, pulling his cap down over his head or his hat. You know what I'm saying? I don't quite understand that, son.
Yeah.
You know?
You don't take your crypto to a yard sale.
That's right. Do not do that. And, you know, try to deal in something that you really understand.
Yeah.
That's been around a long time, that you're not going to get in trouble with. You know, something that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, insurance companies have been around, you know, 100 years. A lot of companies have been around that long. And when you deal with a company that's been in business a long time, your odds are really great. But if you're dealing with a new company, you know, like that car company that serviced all this, and when all was said and done, it's about $2 billion.
Ooh.
And, you know, the banks are snatching and grabbing. They had all invested in that, and it's gone. So they're going to have some heavy losses. So I'm saying, if you know, what they were doing, they were financing these used cars. And the guy would bring them a whole batch and say, okay, here's 200,000 of car notes. They're good notes. But they weren't. They were in default. They weren't telling them the full story.
Oh, wow.
So if you can cut your odds down, it's a better thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe in cutting the odds down.
Yeah, I mean, some people, I mean, if it's shiny and new and it's fun and you've got some extra money to play with, sure, go for it. But the last thing that I would think that people wanted to do would be to risk their entire retirement on something that people don't really understand. The last time I heard somebody describe crypto, it was like, okay, it's money, but you can't touch it, you can't see it, you can't hold it, and you can't spend it on anything. So I'm like, what is the
point?
We
can trade it. We can trade it.
We can trade it.
Of course. And what bothers me is elderly people think they're buying gold bars right now.
Oh, no.
And we find out that it's a scam. There is no gold bars. The people that are calling you do not have any gold bars. All they have is a quick exit out of your bank account.
Wow. So they just take your cash and you get nothing for it.
Yeah, they talk to you and give them your banking information, and they transfer the money out. They say, okay, you buy 50,000 with us of gold bars? Oh, yeah. And then they say, well, why don't you just go ahead and, you know, do a million? I mean, you know, and people are doing it, and they get caught, and there is no gold bars. The money has left the country.
Wow.
So a cautionary tale,
You know, it's like when I start hearing all these stories about, you know, the different scams and whatnot, it makes me think there's this, all these scams are in place so that people can get cash, like money. That, like, money that you can go to the grocery store and spend. Like, you could never take a gold bar to a Kroger and buy stuff.
I don't think they'd want your gold bar.
No.
But if you had a real gold bar, you know, it'd make a difference. But, you know, in order to use them, you have to cash them in.
Yeah.
And so you have to have somebody legitimate to do that. And there's a lot of legitimate gold companies.
Sure.
But the people that call you on the phone that do not know you, the stranger's calling, wanting you to invest, you don't know anything about that stranger.
Yeah.
And they give strangers money, then when they panic when they don't get the gold bars, and when the money's gone, then they have to tell their family what they did.
Oh, that's a hard conversation.
It's a hard conversation. We may have to move in with you, Mama. You know, I mean, that's that bad. So do something with reputable people.
Yeah.
Do something with people that live here. We know they're Texans. We know they're close, you know. Do not do business with people in a foreign country.
And, you know, the other thing with, like, life settlements and annuities, anytime you're dealing with an insurance product, you're dealing with a company that has the cash resources on hand. It's not something that's you know, like in crypto over here or in gold over there, or, you know, it's in, you know, this big office building we built, so we'll go borrow against it. And no, they have the reserves on hand, and it's actually cold, hard cash. And so it's not like we're dealing with some kind of weird thing that we don't understand. It's like by law, they have to have it all there at any given time for any policy that matures.
They have to have reserves by law, and they have put up a lot more reserves than the banks do.
Yeah.
And our banks are big. Our banks are strong. But insurance companies, I think, are even stronger because they make them put up reserves, which a bank doesn't have to have that many reserves. They don't have to have as amount of liquidity, you know, as others do. But I would say always do business with people here in Texas that we know, and not somebody that's calling you on the phone from Africa. You know, that's a bad sign. You know, it's a bad sign. Of course, they tell you they're right here, but we know they're not, don't we?
Yeah, we've heard the stories.
So anyway, a conservative investing is best. You know, we do everything through a bank. Nevada Trust is a trustee on everything we do. And then we use the life insurance companies that are big. They're in the billions. We do business with companies in the billions. We manage $100 million.
Wow. Man, that's a big load.
You know, it's pretty big. And then we use a company that checks the policies every week. They're checking to see if anybody has died. They're checking to see what the status is. We have life expectancies on everybody that we buy. And, of course, this week we had two more maturities.
Oh, really?
You know, we've been having a lot of maturities lately. And we had two more this week.
Oh, wow.
So that's a good thing. People will be getting paid on that. Both of them have got several people that I know quite well on there. One has got, let's see, 7 in it, and one's got 4.
Oh, wow.
One's going to pay out $840,000. They're going to make 30%. The other one's a little bit less than that, but they're both getting paid. So they've got money coming. They're going to be glad.
I just hear you say those payouts, and I'm thinking it's just a no-brainer. I don't know why anybody would ever be confused or think, man, I'm not really sure about life settlements. It's just, I mean, it's the whole concept is really, really straightforward. And there's so many guidelines, especially like people who are worried about, like we talk about, unregulated types of investments, you know, the scams that we talk about and things like that. But with a life settlement, there are so many regulations in place. I mean, it's just, and everything's already mapped out. So, like, for example, these people that were in this policy that you were just talking about, or either one, before it was even done, everybody knew, okay, when this matures, this much is going to go to this investor, this much will go to this investor. It's already mapped out ahead of time. Everybody knows. And so what happens? I mean, you get the certificate, and then I assume it goes through some kind of process, right?
It goes through a lot. It takes about 3 weeks after we buy a policy and close on it to do all the paperwork. They've got to furnish all the premiums for the next few years. They've got to furnish us the signatures of the owner relinquishing that policy. There's just so many things they have to give us. They have to give us a copy of the entire insurance policy. Everything has to be transferred to Nevada Trust. Nevada Trust signs off on it because they are, in fact, the trustee that runs the policy after it's bought. So they're overseeing the money for the clients. They're their protection. They're there for our protection. They protect all of us. And that's why we've done business with them so many years. And they've been in business 27 years, and we've been in business almost 24.
Wow. That's longevity matters.
So we didn't just start yesterday.
No. And you've learned a lot over the years. So you've really, I would almost say that you've perfected the entire investment, you know, because of things that you've learned. I mean, when you started doing life settlements, I can only imagine that there probably weren't a whole lot of people that were doing these kinds of things.
And we had never heard of it.
Yeah.
And we started doing it, but we had to learn. And it took several years to learn everything we needed to know because we were naive when we bought policies. And it took a long time to find out, you know, the premiums got to be low. It's got to be like 36 months or less. And, we learned a lot. The payment that we've always paid has worked out. You know, we pay over 1% a month for the time they have it. We escrow premiums beyond what is called for. And most people don't do all this. So we do go extra. We try to go that extra mile.
Yeah.
And it works out.
It does. And it really, the investments and the policies that you've done in the last several years have really come in a lot closer to what the LE expects.
What they're supposed to, yes. We had quite a few go over, and it's because we trusted the people, and their LEs were not as good as they should have been. People weren't as sick as we thought they were. But the ones we've been doing since about 22 or 23, they're coming in good. They're coming in early or on time.
Yeah. And you've also, on top of all that, you've really got such a specific niche that you're looking for. I know that you said before that you have a number of policies come across your desk that you don't even bid on them because they're not what you're looking for.
Sometimes they're too old, and you know I don't want to do old people.
No,
they
old
live
people.
Forever. We have one that we can attest to, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we're still got the light out. We've got a lot of money in that policy, but. You know, the policies that we do, we try to, you know, make sure they're short as possible, that they're convertible to permanent life, that they've got a short term. Lots of times the premiums are even paid up. And some policies have a deal in there where that if you get sick, really ill, the premiums are waived. So lots of times we'll buy a policy and the premiums have been waived. Mm. One of these policies that matured had no premiums.
Wow, really?
Premiums were paid up, yes. What,
one of the ones that matured
zero
this
premiums.
Week?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It had zero premiums.
Neat. That's
there
cool.
There was no premium calls, zero premiums. So that's on the large policy, $840,000. There was no premiums.
Oh, wow. I bet that one got filled in a hurry.
It did, and now it's come due, and we're tickled to death to pay the people, and all the people have been notified that they've got money coming. And wow. Everybody loves that when you can tell them you've got money coming. And one person is on both policies.
Oh, wow. So it'll be a big week for them.
Yes, he's getting $162,000 out of one. And he's getting like 47,000 out of the other one. So it'll be a good day.
I giggle because it's like you talk about actual dollars that people are getting paid, and it's like, wow, that's pretty impressive. So then I got to ask, now I know that there are different degrees of engagement for different investors. So some will maybe sit on the sidelines. There's some in the middle that will be, I'll get in one or two here or there. And then you've got the ones that are really hardcore invested, and they are always in a number of policies. So,
well, we have a lot of doctors in our policies. We have several doctors that have been with us several years. I've got a hand specialist. I've got a baby doctor. I've got all kinds of doctors. Then we've got several lawyers that are in the oil and gas business, and they invest with us. So, you know, we have all different kinds of people. Then most of the other people are, you know, work for oil companies. They have a 401k that they are investing out of, or they may have a joint policy with their wife.
So you got a bunch of different types of investors.
Yes, we do. And I've got some farmers.
So then let me ask you this. When something, say a policy matures and, I don't know, like this week, if you've got some heavy investors, how soon do they say, okay, I know you just notified us this week, but start looking for a policy for us to get in next? Does that happen?
Yes, and lots of times people call us and say, you know, I've got all this money in my account. I'd like to get some policies. And we tell them how soon it'll be for each one.
Okay. So, and that's really the key, I would assume, to making the investment more, how do I say this? Getting the most out of the investment, growing your profile the fastest, would be to always really stay in a number of policies so that when one matures, reinvest, another matures, reinvest. That's really the key to I guess, growing your portfolio in the most efficient way. Is that right? Or
yes, I mean, if you're just sporadic, you're not going to make as much because you're not fully invested all the time.
Hmm. Yeah, well,
but we have a number of people, probably 100 at least, that we know they consistently invest.
Yeah. And I'm sure they probably, and I won't ask for numbers or anything like that, but I'm sure they have probably grown their portfolio exponentially in the last several years so that they can retire probably more than comfortably than those that are maybe not so engaged, maybe the right way to say it. I don't know.
Are you sure?
Yeah, pretty sure.
and if you're engaged, you're making money.
Yeah.
You're sitting on the sidelines. You're not making much.
Yeah, exactly.
So when it depends which way you are, which kind of investor you are.
Just to give people an idea, if you have a new investor who's thinking about this, never done life settlements before, just kind of give like a general basic middle of the road and not super engaged, but not on the sidelines. Where would somebody come in to start with? What would you recommend for maybe a dollar amount in, the number of policies in, just to kind of start with and do well?
Well, I would have 5 or 6 policies.
Okay.
If I was going to just get started and see how it goes and how you like it.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that seems perfectly doable. I would imagine probably your biggest investors.
It's doable for most people. All the people that come to us have, you know, between 300,000 and 2 million.
Oh, okay. All right. So somebody,
and remember, they must be accredited to do this.
Oh,
so you know that tells you there they either make $200,000 a year, or they're worth $1 million without their home.
Yeah, so yeah, there is a qualification process, and so
some of them own it, oil companies, not just work there. Some of them own oil companies. we've got a couple of people that own oil companies that invest with us.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So,
and they've made some pretty good money.
Would it be no? But let me make this more of a question. Is it fair to say probably that some of the people who have come over and started investing in life settlements may have started with maybe 5-ish policies and then realized, oh, my gosh, this is fantastic, and have all of a sudden called you and said, hey, put me in 10, put me in 20. Is that kind of how?
No, what they'll do this and bring it over 300,000.
Ah, okay.
That's what they do, and that happens all the time. Just like clockwork, they'll say, "Hey, I'm bringing another 300, another 400,000. Put it in my account, please."
Okay.
And that's the way we do it. It's just a simple process.
And it just grows. They just make money, and it just grows, and that's.
They're happy.
Yeah.
And we're happy.
Yeah.
And of course, I keep losing clients. I've had a couple die last year. I've got another gentleman that's not in good shape now. That's a great investor. Been with us a long, long time. We think a lot of him, and he's going through a difficult battle right now.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's especially painful because your clients are not just numbers. You know them as people, and
yes, I do.
You know, yeah.
And we, you know, we do a lot of business with them, and it's very sad when they get ill.
I would imagine, though, probably when you know people, their family, husbands, wives, situation, where they've worked, what their plans are, what they plan on doing after they retire, things like that, I'm sure knowing that probably helps you to create more of a, I don't want to say a customized plan, but, you know, helps them kind of, I guess, get started or move in the right direction to get to where they want to be with what they have. And here's your starting point. Here's your end point. And we're going to, you know, put you on a trajectory to get there. And I would imagine that's probably helpful. And I imagine people probably appreciate that, too, knowing that, you know, you may call somebody and say, hey, we got a policy in. It's got your name all over it. You're the first person I thought of, or something like that.
Yes, I send them a note lots of times. If somebody is on the fence, and I'll say, you know, I really like this policy, I'll go in it too. So, and I sometimes I do.
Hmm.
And needless to say, I have a lot of money in some policies.
Yeah. One of them is that old one we were talking about.
Yes. I have so much money in that old policy. Nobody can tell me anything about that, I'll tell you.
You've told
it
that story
before. It slipped
up
on me somehow. You know?
You were talking about the accreditation situation with life settlements. If anybody is not accredited and they're thinking, well, gosh, I don't qualify for that, there's always annuities. And so that's a great option for people as well. The qualifications
aren't
quite...
Annuities are a great, great option. They're very conservative. They have everything I ever wanted in an investment, for older people especially. It's a great investment because you can sit back and relax. It's going to make interest with you out you doing a thing. You don't have to hover it over it like a mother hen. It makes its money... It's locked in at the end of 1 year. Each year it's locked in. Your interest is locked in. It doesn't go anywhere. That's what I love about annuities. It's easier to get in an annuity. The requirements are not as hard as they are for life settlements.
Hmm.
You do not have to be accredited to do an annuity, thank goodness. And our annuities are still, they brought that bonus back up to 16. So when you do an annuity right now, you're getting 16% interest up front.
Yeah, that's on top of any profit or on top of anything
else. That's right.
It
doesn't matter what it makes for the first year. You get that added right away. So you get that before you get anything. Then every year for 3 years, they will put that 16% back in your account if you add more money. So if you add money 3 years in a row, you get the 16%. Plus whatever it makes.
Yeah.
So, and they said that it was so popular, that's why they brought it back again. They said they'd had so many requests from the people that do business with them for that bonus.
I'm sure. I mean,
you know, we didn't used to have bonuses. I can remember all these years not having bonuses.
Yeah.
It was a good deal without them, but with it, it's really great.
Yeah. It's just 16% of extra money. And so.
That's right.
What could be wrong with that?
That's right. So it's a good deal. Annuities, as I said, they pay every year. The average on annuities is 10%. They've made a lot more than that some years and sometimes less. But we track what they make. That's one thing the companies do for us. They'll track it and tell us, you know, each year what the annuities made. And they've improved annuities, improved them over the years.
Yeah.
So I love annuities. I recommend annuities. If you're, you know, getting older and you don't want the stock market and you want to be conservative and you're going to travel, an annuity is the way to go. Because once a year you can take out 10%, and that's probably too much. You probably need to be taking, you know, like 4% or 3%. But a person can take 10%. But most of my clients will say, "Hey, I don't need that much."
Hmm.
Yeah. And they may have more than one annuity. They may have a his and her joint annuity, an IRA annuity, a Roth annuity. There's so many different kinds of annuities you can have.
Yeah. And people don't have to do anything with them. They can go about living their life, travel the world, go to Europe, you know, do whatever you want to do. The annuity doesn't take any effort. You don't have to do anything.
Any management. No, it's self-managed.
Yeah.
And remember, there's no taxes till you take it out. It's all tax deferred every year until you take it out. Now, when you get 73 and a half, you have to make distributions. But other than that, you do not have to take anything out.
Yeah, and then compound
interest. If it's a Roth, you don't ever have to take anything out because you paid the taxes up front. And it won't hurt you paying the taxes up front because you're getting the bonus.
Yeah.
So that will offset what you had to pay in taxes.
Boy, you put it that way. I hadn't thought about that before. You pay the taxes up front. You got the bonus on top of it, which compensates for that. And then it's just like, it's just at that point, it's just literally riding the coattails and sailing away into the sunset. And you don't have to.
It really is because you don't have to ever take anything out. unless you want to, but it's not taxed for the rest of your life. So all this profit that you're going to make is not taxed. It's a heck of a deal.
Yeah, it is. I know for me, taxes are always that little voice in the back of my head that's saying, oh, you're going to have to pay on this. But
that's right.
But you don't have to. You pay them up front, forget about it, as they say.
That's right. Yeah, it's just, and it's so conservative. It's just not like the stock market or these other things. You know, it's tax deferred. Just so many things in it, and it's got choices. It's got new choices every year, and what doesn't work one year, they'll change it out and say, okay, this one didn't do as good this year. We'll put this in. You've got a lot of choices, and sometimes it all works, and we don't even change it.
Yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, it just seems like a win-win no matter how you look at it. People, if they're going to leave their money sitting someplace, it's better to sit in an annuity because it's going to do exactly what it's supposed to do, make more money. Whereas if it just sits in a bank account, I mean, you're not going to really make any money that way. So,
That's right. If it's just sitting in the bank, it's not doing any good for anybody except the bank.
Yeah, and you still protect your principal with an annuity. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, your principal's always guaranteed. So it's a safe investment. It's for people that are conservative.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to go out here and risk everything, an annuity won't work. Because an annuity, there's not that risk factor, you know? It's steady as she goes.
You say
and
a lot.
And it makes money, and it'll make money over the years. And I love annuities.
Yeah. I can't think of it. I mean, I can see why there has been so much excitement and so many people calling in recent months that have said, hey, I'm really interested in annuities. I haven't really thought about them before. But yeah, I can see why there is such a renewed excitement about them now. So,
and it avoids probate. Don't forget that.
Oh, that too. Yes. That's
yeah,
a
it
big
avoids
deal.
Probate. So that's a good thing. So if you pass away, which we're all going to do eventually anyway, I hope it's eventually, the nice thing is you can get an annuity cashed if you need it or some cash out of it right away. Let's say uncle dies and leaves you an annuity. You can start taking money out right away, or if you need to cash it, you can cash it.
Yeah.
Most people want you to take a payout. That's what your relatives want when they set it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't want you to run out and cash it in.
And when
I
it's,
can tell you that.
You have it set up in a trust. It can't be, like you said, you avoid probate, and you don't have to even worry about it being hung up in the court system for years and years and years. So.
That's right. And you can change beneficiaries. If you start out with one beneficiary, 5 years later you said, you know, that person is just rotten to the core. You can change it. You know, it's not set in stone. You can always change your beneficiaries. Or if you need to add some, let's say you've got a primary beneficiary and you need to add a second beneficiary. So if something happens to the first one, you're next in line. Or you may say, I want to divide it between this beneficiary and this one. You can do that.
Neat. I like the fact that there's so much flexibility. I think sometimes people think, oh, once I do this, it's etched in stone forever. But knowing that people can make changes and, you know, swap things around and all this, it really gives people, I would think, a sense of freedom that they don't really have to, you know, because like you say, there are falling outs within families that happens all the time. And if somebody, you know, turns their back and all of a sudden it's not such a good relationship, you can make those changes. And so they don't get anything. Sometimes, and I know you've told stories about this in the past, but sometimes people have made those changes without informing the family. And then that's always drama and excitement. But
so that's right. And a lot of families have drama. We don't even know the half of it, what their drama is. But we hear about it, let me tell you. And, you know, a lot of people are raising their grandchildren. I have a lot of clients that, due to family problems, they've got their grandkids. So it's an extra burden, and they want to be sure those grandkids are taken care of. So I have several clients that are raising their grandchildren due to circumstances, and they've told me about it. And they said, you know, I need to provide for my granddaughters. And so I do have several that are providing for grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah, planning ahead for future family members. That's pretty cool. So,
and so they want to be sure those children are taken care of if something happens to them.
Nice. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And we're a little tardy, so we're later than
always
usual.
Always tardy.
We are always tardy. That's our middle name. So anyway, usually at this time or a little bit earlier, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
Okay, it's Marshall, Texas.
Oh.
You know, it was really important after the Confederate States of America during the American Civil War. A lot of people don't know it. I didn't know it. This is where your cotton plantations were. We're in Marshall, Texas.
Oh.
I did not know that. And the wealth of the county, the city, it depended on the cotton market. So from the 19th century to 20th century, they developed as a center of the Texas and Pacific Railroad. And after World War II, they were creating social change through civil rights. Then they had black colleges and universities in the area. This is where some of your first black colleges were.
Wow.
And then they had the largest light festival in the United States. It was called the Wonderland of Light. Now, it is the pottery capital of the world.
Really?
Of the world.
The
yes.
entire world.
For the entire world. It's the pottery capital of the world. And they've been called the cultural capital of East Texas, the gateway of Texas, Athens of Texas, and city of seven flags. They've been called a lot of things. So there is a plantation there. It's Wyling Plantation. It was the girl home of Lucy Holcomb Pickens. She's the only woman whose image was used on the Confederate currency.
No, really?
Yes, from
wow.
right there.
Neat.
So in 1880, the freedmen bought the plantation and used it for the first campus of Bishop College, which is a black college that was founded right there in Marshall. And so Marshall was founded in 1841. Hmm. And they were going to establish a county seat on the Sabine River, but that failed. So the Republic of Texas chose the land, donated by it by Peter Whetstone and Isaac Van Zandt. It became a major city with a stagecoach running through it. How about that?
Cool.
It was the first railroad lines constructed in Texas.
Hmm, really?
Yes. And now then it's the first city in Texas that had a telegraph line running to New Orleans.
Oh, wow. Telegraph. First, cool.
And the first electricity in Texas was in Marshall, Texas.
Seriously?
First electricity.
Wow.
And in 1880, it was one of the South's largest cotton markets. And I would not have believed that Texas had that kind of cotton back then.
I know it. I know it's a big industry, but I didn't realize back like 1841-ish, there was that much cotton in the state to make it so profitable.
Yes, it was. It was a huge cotton industry. And Marshall Pottery was established in 1895.
Wow, cool.
And so it is the pottery capital of the world, not just Texas, but the world.
Wow.
And by 1860, it was the fourth largest city in Texas and the city of the richest county in Texas.
Of course, I guess if you had electricity and all these other things, the telegraph and all the other benefits, I guess that's where the wealthy people would go because that's luxury back then.
And it was a major Confederate supply depot and the manufacturer of gunpowder for the Confederate Army. And the Confederate government of Missouri made Marshall its temporary capital. So then that's when it became named the City of Seven Flags. It was a nod to the Missourians, in addition to Six Flags that we have flying over Texas. And then after the fall of Vicksburg, Marshall became the the seat of Confederate Civil Authority and headquarters of the Trans-Mississippi Postal Department.
Really?
Yeah, all this was going on. And it has been the target of a failed Union advance that was rebuffed at Mansfield, Louisiana. Wow. And then toward the end of the Civil War, the Confederate government shipped $9 million in treasury notes and $3 million in postage stamps to Marshall Taylor. Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
Now then, they struck oil there. And near Caddo Lake in 1909, it was one of the largest oil fields there was. And then in 1930, the largest oil field in the world was discovered over by Kilgore.
Hmm.
And now, this is funny, the first student at Marshall High to have a car was Lady Bird Johnson.
Really? Oh, wow. Now, that's cool.
I had
cool.
to find somebody famous that lived there. You know how I am about famous people.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So Lady Bird Johnson had the first car in the high school.
Now, that's awesome.
So Marshall really had a large seat during the Civil War and all this Confederates. You know, we're using it as a depot, everything else. Then you had all the black colleges that were established there. The City of Lights, the pottery, largest pottery deal in the world. And then they had an opera house, by the way.
Really?
They had an opera house. And what happened, after all these good things happened, they built the old houses, the wonderful mansions. All these people let it go to it's a rag and ruin.
No.
And now they're trying to replace all this, rebuild all this, and I don't know if they really can, but they finally woke up and said, look what we've lost.
Yeah. I mean,
all their history was gone because they let it go to rack and ruin. The opera house was in disrespect, repair, everything. And all these wonderful things in Marshall were lost forever, I'm afraid.
Oh, no, because I was wanting to think to myself, I'm like, wow, I'd love to go see all this, and if the old buildings are there, and because, you know, I love to
walk
through history.
Well, they've got some that are still there, and a lot of pretty old churches and some mansions still there, but not all of them.
Nice.
And, you know, it's ridiculous that they let all this go to rack and ruin, but they have the largest light festival in the world. It was called the Wonderland of Light, and it's the pottery capital of the world and the gateway to Texas.
Wow.
How about that?
That is awesome. That is, I mean, there's, I know we've talked about, you know, other places in Texas before, but I don't remember one of them that has this many claim to fames or firsts or, you know, this much kind of history or this many different things going on. This is cool.
Well, and all the universities they created, the opera house, all these things, the pottery deals in the 1800s, and it's still going today, and it's still the biggest in the world. I mean, that's what they're famous for. And then the lights, and then the oil hit them.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't believe that the Confederates were using this as a staging place back then. I mean, they were building gunpowder there and doing all this. I mean, and Missouri named it their capital city. I mean, there was so much going on in Marshall, Texas.
Yeah, it was the place to be is what it sounds like.
And the cotton, I had no idea. I'd never heard of cotton being grown in Marshall, Texas.
Mm-mm.
And it was really the cotton capital of Texas.
Yeah.
They had so much cotton and big plantations. And that one big plantation, you know, that girl from that family was on the Confederate coins.
I know it. That's pretty cool. I mean, they don't just put your face on a piece of coin for nothing. So
that's right. They don't just think that up.
Yeah.
You know,
that's impressive. Really impressive. Well, I think
so. A lot of stuff happened in Marshall that I didn't even know. I had no idea about.
Yeah. I feel a little trip coming up to Marshall just to kind of, you know, see all this. And I know not everything is there, but it sounds like there's enough to really kind of appreciate, you know, some of the architecture, the way that life was lived back then, and see, you know, because there's a lot of things that happened. It would be worth to see, you know, the different aspects of influence.
Yeah, lots that did happen there.
Yeah.
You know, that, and they have restored a lot of it, but sadly, a lot of it was, I don't think can be restored, but it's just a really interesting place. And they had so many names for it. You know, that's what was so funny.
Yeah.
And it was named after the Greek city, you know, that had the same name. That was interesting to me.
Yeah. Marshall, Texas, probably one of the most busy places there ever was.
I guarantee, especially when they had all that cotton going on, and they were, you know, shipping cotton out, the railroads and all that. And now there's three different highways that go through Marshall, Texas.
That's cool. That's really cool. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
I can honestly say I don't think I knew hardly any of this about Marshall. I didn't know. And so this is all new to me, I think. Maybe other people knew, but not me. So
I didn't know any of it, and I've lived here a long time, but I had no idea that, you know, what all it really had.
Yeah.
And that it was so important during the Civil War. And then afterwards, they were growing so much cotton. And I didn't know there was a plantation there at all.
Uh-uh.
Did not know about plantations and the amount of cotton that was grown there. Then the oil boom hit. And I don't think they've ever looked back.
Yeah, that kind of sealed the deal. So.
And I don't know who owns the pottery company, but it's the biggest in the world.
Yeah, not just the state, you know, the world. So
the world.
It's impressive.
There's nothing in it. And I guess there's a lot of people work for the pottery company, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be. I mean, you can't have that big of a thing and not have some people working there. So I
That's right.
So.
You got to have a big crew to take care of that.
Yeah. Okay, so real quick before we wrap, I know you talked about accreditation with life settlements, but there are two risks that people know about. What's the first one?
The biggest risk would be if it goes over, you have to pay premiums. So you need to make sure that we have escrowed, you know, a year or more, and we always escrow an extra year on that. Cool. So you've got that extra year of premium right there. Always ask us how much the premium's going to be. We always tell you. But when we send out an invitation to come into a policy, that's one of the things we tell you. How much the premium is, if there's premium. If there's no premium, how much it'd be for the length of time your policy is. So we give you all the health information plus this information. Then we tell you how much we'd like for you to invest.
Okay. And then the second risk?
The second risk is, remember, it's not liquid till it matures.
Okay. And yeah, most people know that being accredited, kind of, it's almost like a non-issue, but you like people to know anyway, so.
Yeah, they're not looking for the money before it's due.
Yeah.
I've never had anybody want needed before.
Yeah. Of course, now that we've said that, who knows?
Somebody will say that.
All right. So for people to get started or come get more information, they do need to make an appointment. So one last time, what's your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.